أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، وباعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، الذي بعد فلا يرى وقرب فشهد النجوى، تبارك وتعالى. ثم الصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على خاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين وشفيع المذنبين، الرسول المؤيد والنبي الممجد المصطفى الأمجد أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، لا سيما على الإمام المنتظر وحجة الله الثاني عشر ابن العسكري المنتظر، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين، من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فإن الله الصادق العليم قال في كتابه الكريم القرآن الحكيم: بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. حتى إذا جاء أحدهم الموت قال رب ارجعوني لعلي أعمل صالحا فيما تركت. كلا إنها هي كلمة هو قائلها، ومن ورائهم برزخ إلى يوم يبعثون. سلام. Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Into the third night of our series that was requested, and as we proceed, apparently there have been a series of requests, some to me and some to the Jamaat. Some requests, feedback from the gents section, and some from the ladies, requesting that the duration of the majalis ought to be increased. I have no problems. The thing is that I'm already hovering around an hour. So if the timing has to be increased, then you ought to know what to expect. If you're ready for it, I have no problems. We will try, inshallah. Initially, a couple of lectures, three lectures, four lectures, testing lectures, to see the stamina of the audience. Then we will move on. Yes, I will have no option in view of the request that I have been receiving, that I will have to increase the lectures. How much? Now that will be upon me. You've asked me to increase. Now you'll have to bear the consequences. Before we start, sallu ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. Continuing with our discussion, and where we had left off last evening, we need to understand that this journey that we have been, or rather embarked upon, is a journey which is a one-way journey. There is no turning back. Once the journey has started, it's like a one-way valve. You know, in the heart, between the auricles and the ventricles, there is a one-way valve. Goes from the auricle into the ventricle, never goes back. This journey is a one-way journey. Once it has started, it has to move. And it can only move in one direction. And that movement and that direction is from the cradle, as we say it, or from the womb to the day of judgment, where each of us is going to meet our Lord and our Master. Meet Him to report to Him that we, as your creation, that you had sent us into this world, what we as your creation have done vis-a-vis your rulings and your commandments. This is basically the summary of this entire journey. That a plan has been made, a creation has been created with a certain objective placed into the earth, and a time period given. A time will come and I want you to come back to me and report to me what you did. Based on the report that you give to me, I will behave with you, I will reciprocate, I will respond to you. This is the entire summary. But this is just a skeleton. The flesh is very difficult. And yesterday we heard the things that a person complains about, the deceptions that a person is deceived by all during the time that he has been in this world. And this is not something that is specific to ordinary people. There have been so many occasions where each of our ma'asumeen, whenever they have been referred to the aspect of death and the akhirah, have not resisted the opportunity to shed tears. You find a rabbi sitting with the fourth imam, and suddenly the fourth imam begins to cry. And this rabbi is surprised and he's saying, Yabna Rasulullah, what makes you cry? Why are you weeping? Limada tabki, why are you crying? An imam comes up with a long-winded explanation. He says, فَمَالِي لَا أَبْكِي, and why should I not cry? فَمَالِي لَا أَبْكِي, why should I not cry? أَبْكِي لِخُرُوجِ نَفْسِي, I cry when I think the soul is going to come out of my body. وَأَبْكِي لِظُلْمَةِ قَبْرِي, I'm crying when I think that my grave is going to be dark and I'm going to be all alone. أَبْكِي لِضِيقِ لَحْدِي, I'm crying, I weep when I see, when I imagine, when I envisage that in that constrained space of 6 feet by 4 feet, I'm going to be all alone. أَبْكِي لِخُرُوجِي مِنْ قَبْرِي عُرْيَانًا ذَلِيلًا حَامِلًا ثِقْلِي عَلَى ظَحْرِي, I weep at that moment, thinking about that moment, reflecting about that moment, that a time will come when I will have to come out of the grave naked, humiliated, with the visor and with the burden of my sins carried by only me. أَبْكِي لِسُؤَالٍ مُنْكَرٍ وَنَكِيرٍ إِيَّايَ, I cry when I'm imagining a time will come when I shall be alone at a place and there will be two of these angels, شَدَادُ الْغِلَاظِ, those strict angels of God who was going to interrogate and question to me. Saying, فَمَا لِي لَا أَبْكِي, and why should I not cry? These are the things that make me cry. These are the things that made Ali cry. These are the things that made Fatima cry. There have been so many instances, a particular instance when certain surah was revealed to the Holy Prophet, and the Holy Prophet's face when Kabisa read. Imam Ali and Bibi Fatima are listening, are watching him, saying, what is it? He's saying, this is what has been revealed. And tradition says they began to weep, and they began to weep, and they began to weep so much, both Ali and Fatima faint. This is the fact. But this is what we need to understand. As we move forward, now the incident of death that we discussed about took place. Once a person dies, his next step before he reaches the day of judgment, there's a very prolonged period. A person is remaining in this world. What takes him away from this world is death. After death comes He is not immediately taken, and the day of judgment does not stand up and establish itself for him. A day of judgment is a place where everybody will be resurrected. But from the time a person dies, till the time he is made to get up for the day of judgment, that period is an intermediary period, an intervening period for every person. From the time of Hadrat Adam alayhis salam till the time the last person dies. And this period, the intervening period, is referred to in the Islamic terminology as barzakh. Barzakh, according to the lexicon, according to the dictionary, means a barrier. So anything that is a barrier between two things is referred to as the barzakh. Anything that has, that serves as a barrier between two things, according to the Arabic dictionary, means a barrier, is referred to as barzakh. In the Islamic terminology, barzakh refers to that barrier, that period that separates the life of this world to the life of the Akhirah, to the life of the Day of Judgment. Obviously, after a person dies, his Akhirah starts. But even the Akhirah has several steps, and Akhirah has several levels. That levels, those levels that are preceding after death, preceding the Day of Judgment, that intervening period is referred to as the barzakh. And an amazing position that is, and an amazing phase that is. Because one of the longest phases that a person will face is this phase. Now assume those people at the time of Hadrat Adam alayhi salam, Habil and Qabil, they have died thousands of years ago. They are in the state of barzakh. How many more years remaining for the day of judgment to come, neither you know nor I know. Till the time that they are in the day of, till the day of judgment comes, they are in the state of barzakh. So this entire intervening period between a person's death and the time a person is given the order, skum, stand up, is referred to as the barzakh. What makes it very important is that there have been numerous traditions which say that the Ahlul Bayt's help is there. They are going to help us, and I have repeated it and I will continue to repeat. And inshallah we shall dedicate one whole lecture on how the Ahlul Bayt help us. But what thing comes out from the tradition is that majority of their help has been reserved for the day of judgment and beyond that. The reason is that it's not that they will not help us at the time of death. It's not that they would not help us in the barzakh. But the majority of their help has been reserved for the akhirah, for that specific period of the day of judgment. And the reason is that this entire movement that you see from the person's life when he's dying, then goes into the grave, then the barzakh, then it comes into the day of judgment, and then paradise or hell. This entire period is like several levels, and each level is higher than the previous level. Because of the higher and the high and the elevatedness of the next level as opposed to the previous level, the severity and the intensity of the next level is more than the severity and the intensity of the previous level. So the troubles that a person will face in this world is much less than what a person will face when death comes to him. And the troubles that a person will face when he is put into the grave is more than the troubles that he has faced at the time of death. And the troubles that he will face in the subsequent period in barzakh is more than what he would have faced in the previous stage. And once he is made to get up on the day of judgment, the punishments or even the pleasures that he is given is of an intensity which is much, much more than what he had in the barzakh. And then when he goes to paradise or he goes to hell, the intensity of pain and punishment or ecstasy and pleasure is more than what he had got while he was in barzakh. These levels keep moving one beyond the other, one above the other, the next level more severe, more intense than the previous level. And hence the maximum support that is required is at that time reserved for that time. But that doesn't mean that the Ahlul Bayt will not help us in the previous stages. They will help us. But it's a modified version of their absolute help that will be manifested on the Day of Judgment. However, while we are in Barzakh, we need to understand that there are certain characteristics of this place. Without understanding of which, you will not understand that why the Masumeen says, I am not worried about you on the Day of Judgment.
I'm not worried about you on the day of Qiyamah. On the day of Qiyamah, we will be there for you. These are the hadith I'm narrating now. Masoom says, Imam Ali says, several Masoomin have been quoted to have reported and stated, I'm not worried about you on the day of judgment. Again, this has بِشَرْتِهَا وَشُرُوتِهَا. It has its conditions, this sentence. But let's take it per se, since we are in the beginning of our discussion. Imam says that I'm not worried about you on the day of judgment. On the day of judgment, we're going to take your hand and pull you up. We are worried about you in Barzakh. How are you going to come out in Barzakh? When a Masoom says this, that means we have to realize there is some concern in his mind. That he's stating that no, on the day of judgment, we will be there to help you. We are worried what would happen to you and what you would do in Barzakh. How are you going to come out of that bottleneck? To understand this bottleneck, the whole lecture of today, of tonight, dedicated to this topic. See, the Barzakh is a realm by itself. Just as dunya is a realm by itself, Barzakh is another realm by itself. It's a world by itself. It's a domain by itself that is controlled and regulated by its own rulings and laws, supervised by that Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There is nothing that takes place in Islam that is ad hoc. There is nothing in Islam that takes place randomly. Keep this sentence in mind. Another 10 minutes later, I will have to explain this further. As soon as a person goes to Barzakh, and this is something that is again very clearly stated in the Quran, which I recited in the beginning. Surah Mu'minun, verse number 99 and 100 says, and explains what this Barzakh is. That mention about one-way valve that I explained to you is coming from this verse, these two verses. When Allah says, حَتَّى إِذَا جَاءَ أَحَدُكُمُ الْمَوْتِ, that one of you when maut comes, قَالُ, قَال, he says, what does he say? رَبِّ رُجْعُونِي, send me back, I don't want to go in front. رَبِّ رُجْعُونِي, oh Allah, send me back, I don't want to go in front, front is a problem. Send me back, for what? حَتَّى أَعْمَلُ سَالِحًا فِي مَا تَرَكْتُ, so that I can go back, and I can make amends for all the misdeeds that I've done. I do actions, أَعْمَلُ صَالِحًا, I do amal-e saleh at the back. So that now when I'm brought back again, I see a light in front of me. I don't see darkness. رَبِّ رُجِعُونِي حَتَّى أَعْمَلُ صَالِحًا فِي مَا تَرَكْتُ. At that time, Quran says a voice will come to him. And these are quotes from the Quran. Huh? This is what is going to happen. Every person, when he's made to go, he will say to God, Allah, send me back. A voice will come to him, Kalla. In Arabic, Kalla means forget about it. I'm paraphrasing it, my words. You're going back. Kalla. Innaha kalimatun huwa qailuha. These are words that only he is uttering. He is speaking. It has no weight. Because even if he were to go back, he would do the same thing again. How many times we have not done this? Tell me. How many times? There have been instances when we have been in such immense problems. And we come over here, recite Dua Tawassul. We come over here, recite Dua Kumail. Cry, cry, cry. Allah, if I am solved out of this problem, I will change. And He helps us out. We don't change. This is what Allah repeatedly says. You want me to send you back for what? You want to do good deeds? 60 years of your life you did not do good deeds. Now again you want another 60 years. You will not change back. You will go back. You will return to your own ways. Your original ways. Kalla innaha kalimatun huwa qailuha. He doesn't go back. Why? Because it's a one-way valve. وَمِنْ وَرَائِهِمْ, and behind him is a barrier. وَمِنْ وَرَائِهِمْ بَرْزَخٌ, there is a barrier. How long? How long can he not turn back? إِلَى يَوْمَ يُبْعَثُونَ, till the day of judgment. There is no turning back up to the day of judgment. This barrier is so strong, once you pass that world and you come into Barzakh, there is no going back. It is a barrier. The only place you can go is in front. Front way, day of judgment. That's even worse. But, in this world, in this realm called Barzakh, there are certain characteristics that we need to know. Because once you understand these characteristics, some of the things that you've been hearing and we've been hearing, and which always pose a question mark to us, can get solved. In this world, when the soul comes out of the body, of this material body, it cannot remain. It's a spiritual entity. It needs to go into a spiritual world to be in its original state. Barzakh is not a spiritual world, mind you. Barzakh is a semi-spiritual world. That means that world, that realm is part material and part spiritual. What do you mean material world? Material world means everything that is made up of matter. Matter. This is all matter. Anything that can be classified as matter is material. Even light. Light has particles of photons, which is matter, it's a material thing. Beyond this material world, there is something which is referred to as the spiritual world. Spiritual world, or the non-corporeal world, or the non-physical world, in which everything is non-matter. There's no such thing as matter. It's all non-matter. Material world made up of matter. Spiritual world not made up of matter. Like what? Like the soul. Ruh. Ruh is not matter. Angels. Angels are not made up of matter. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Spiritual, not made up of matter. Those are the things that are spiritual. These are the things that are material. Material world with the material aspects and the material things have limitations. So matter requires, has certain limitations. One, it requires space. Two, it is limited and confined by time. Three, it has restrictions in terms of movement. That means if I want to move and I want to move through the wall, matter will not allow me to move. Spiritual world is very different. Spiritual world is not bound by matter. So you find that when the soul wants to come out, it doesn't need an outlet for it to come out. It just passes through matter. Because it is not made up of matter, no matter blocks it. Similarly for the angels, you close all the door and say, I want to sit inside. Let's see how Malakul Maut comes inside. He doesn't need any doors on. He will move through, and because he is not matter, he is non-physical, he is non-corporeal. Similarly, in Barzakh, it is a bain-bain, part-part, part matter and part spiritual. And hence it is said, when the soul comes out of the body, till the time it is not in its spiritual world, it cannot live by itself, it needs a body. And we've got traditions that when the soul comes out of this physical body, and this physical body is thrown, your work is done now. You were the mount of the soul to lead a life of 60 years in this world. Your time is finished. You've even been depreciated in the accounts books. Leave yourself. The soul comes out. When the soul comes out into Barzakh, Rawayat says a special body similar to the body of this world, but in sync with the world of Barzakh, is given for the soul, which is in Arabic terminology referred to as Jism al-Mithali, a similar body, but it has its difference. The body that will be given to the soul will have the same facial recognition, will have the same features. That means I will not look like somebody else. I will look like myself. However, the characteristics of this body will be different. This body is referred to in Arabic terminology as Jism al-Latif, a very subtle body. Body that is subtle. It doesn't have weight. It is not made up of full matter. It is partly matter and partly spiritual, more inclines towards the spiritual body. See this movement of matter which confines movement. Material things have a limitation of movement, is what makes us very difficult to understand. For example, you're given that concept of jinn. Say, jinn move from one place to the other in the blinking of an eye. You might need to take a flight from here to go to New York. But for a jinn to move from here to New York, is before I can step down, he's in New York. Why? Because jinn are made up not of matter. They are made up of a body which is very latif, very subtle. And hence they are not bound by the limitations of matter that you and me are. Jinn can move in through the walls because again their subtle body is not hampered by material objects. So you find that they can move through walls. You can find that they can take forms and shapes of animals and insects. You can find that they can move around in a manner that is much, much faster than us. Because we are hampered by body. They are not hampered by the material limitations of the body. And this is one of the reasons that in Barzakh, because of that subtle body that comes, a person can be at several places. And once, and this is the reason that many of our youths ask, you know, one of the absolutely authentic fact about Imam Ali alayhi salam is what? Something which he himself has stated. Imam Ali alayhi salam, it is said about him that every person who dies, every person, male, female, old, young, Muslim, non-Muslim, munafiq or mu'min, whoever, whenever somebody dies, and this is something that cannot be refuted, whenever somebody dies, he sees Imam Ali alayhi salam beside him. This is something which he himself has said to his companion Harith Hamadani. And a couplet emphasizing this aspect is also narrated. When it says, Ya Hari Ahamadan Man Yamut Yarani Min Mu'minin aw Munafiqin. Whoever dies will see me whether he is a mu'min or a munafiq. That means at the deathbed of every person, when a person is dying, person sees Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now in the world so many people die. At that time a problem comes up into the mind. There is an accident in various places across the world at a given time. There are hundreds of people and thousands of people who die. How is it possible for one man to be there? This is the reason. One is mu'ajiza, miracle, and second because of this barzakhi body that they have got, that they can move around places. In the barzakh, this body that is there is very latif. It is not bound by limitations. Now when this body is there, it has its own features. And riwayat says, and tradition from Imam Sadiq says, Sadiq Ali Muhammad, Ja'far ibn Muhammad in Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam. Tradition, person comes and asks him, saying, we have heard that when a person dies, the soul is taken and is placed in... This is the words of the riwayat I'm quoting. Saying, we have heard that when the person dies, his soul is taken, it is wrapped up in a cloth and placed in the nests of special birds of paradise. See, Imam is looking, where did you get these things from? He's saying, this is not the case. Over there, in the world of God, in the realm of God, in the program of God, you don't have nests of birds where the souls are kept. He says, وَإِذَا قَبَضَهُ اللَّهُ عَزَّ وَجَلْ. When Allah seizes the soul of a person, when Allah takes the soul of a person, سَيَّرَ تِلْكَ الرُّوحِ فِي قَالِبٍ كَقَالِبِ الدُّنْيَا. When a soul of a person is taken out and he's taken to barzakh, he's put into a body that is similar in form to the body of this world. After that he says, يَأْكُلُونَ وَيَشْرَبُونَ. These souls that are put in these special bodies that resemble the body of the dunya, but characteristically are very different from the body of the dunya. Because the body of the dunya is matter. There it is part matter and part spiritual. At that point of time, يَأْكُلُونَ وَيَشْرَبُونَ. These people in that body, they eat as they were eating in the dunya. And they would drink as they were drinking in the dunya. And then he says, وَإِذَا قَدَمَ عَلَيْهِمُ الْقَادِمُ عَرَفُوهُ بِتِلْكَ السُّورَةِ الَّتِي كَانَتْ فِي الدُّنْيَا. And when people would see them in barzakh, don't think that they would be totally different. People would recognize each other. Oh my friend, you are meeting me in Orlando Mosque. How are you? I've just come from the dunya. So the body is there, but the characteristics are different. The movements are different. And the best way to understand, again in the tradition that has come, if somebody were to ask, can you give us a similarity, a comparison, a similitude of how the life of Barzakh would be, the nearest thing that would be appropriate for us to understand is the world of dreams. When we sleep and we dream, in the dreams we experience pleasure. In our dreams we experience pain. In our dreams we experience sorrow. In our dreams we experience the pleasure of food. In our dreams we experience the pleasure of good clothes. In our dreams we see color. In our dreams we see everything. But the difference is there is no weight. Dreams don't have weight. It is dreamt. Everything that is experienced in this world is experienced in the state of dreams. When a boy gets frightened, he urinates in the night. That is a fright. He's in a dream. He experiences it. When he is happy, you can see small children smiling. He's experiencing it in the dream. Only the world of dreams, despite having everything that is there in this world, pain, sorrow, pleasure, ecstasy, pressures, tension, fear, fright, everything is there. Weight of this world is not there. There is no weight. It looks as if it is hollow. This is the most appropriate comparison that we can give to understand the world of Barzakh. But it should not be misconstrued to mean that when a person dies and he is going to be put into the grave, after which and during which the Barzakh would start, that all the actions of God with respect to this man will begin there. There have been occasions, and it's a misconception in our mind, ke jare manas gujri jaye ane kabar ma nakhwa ma aave, that is the time the Barzakh starts. The Barzakh starts the moment the soul comes out. And there have been instances when a body has been subjected to punishment before he's even taken to the grave. Narrated by whom? Muhaddith Qumi. Muhaddith Qumi narrates. He's saying one day, this is the time while he was in Najaf. He's saying one day in Najaf, I decided to go to Wadi Salam to do ziyarat of the qabr. Those who have gone for the ziyarat know that Wadi Salam is one of the biggest graveyards. Very, very highly regarded in Islamic traditions. Very highly regarded. It is not appropriate somebody go to Najaf and not visit Wadi Salam. It has its own history. It has its own rank and martabat. But for now, Muhaddith Qumi says, I decided to go one day to the ziyarat of Ahlul Qubur, the people who have died. So as I go there, and I'm reciting the ziyarat, Assalamu alayki Ahlul Qubur. All of a sudden, when I'm reciting the ziyarat, I'm hearing shouts and shrieking as if somebody is in intense pain. And the word that he uses is that the pain and the shrieking of a camel who is being branded. The pain and the shout of a camel who is being branded. In olden days, the most priceless possession of an Arab was a camel, right? The red-haired camel was the most priceless. In order to distinguish these camels from the property of one another, they would brand it. Brand means what? Each person would have his own emblem, a sign on iron. They would heat that iron and they would put it at the belly of that camel so that that portion would get burnt by the sign. So now everybody knows that this camel belongs to this person. That is called branding. Muhaddith Qumi. Now you understand this mold, in order for it to imprint a sign on the belly of a camel, needs to be heated. And it gets heated till it becomes red hot. Then it is put at the camel, so that that portion becomes burnt. Now that time, a camel is an intense pain. And at that time, he's shrieking and shouting, because now it's getting burnt. He's alive still. Muhaddith Qumi says, when I entered this graveyard, when I was reciting the ziyarat, I suddenly hear the shout and the shrieking, and I thought it was so severe and intense, I thought it was a camel that was being branded. So, out of a natural reaction, I said, let me go and see what is the problem. The sound sounds like a camel being branded. Let me see. He goes to where the sound was. Ajab for him. Seeing there's no camel around. All that he sees are some people who are digging a grave to prepare the grave to put a new person, a new deceased who's lying beside. So he looks around and he sees no camel. Where is the sound coming? All of a sudden the sound shout starts again. What does he see? He sees and he realizes the sound coming from the dead body. The dead body is shrieking and crying. He's saying, when I heard that, I was very upset. I thought it was a camel, but this is a human being, a dead person who's shouting. I turned my attention to the people who are digging the grave. Nobody knows what is happening. Seeing the only person who could hear was me. All the others were ghafil of the fact that this person was shrieking and shouting in pain. You know what it means? It means that even before the putting of a deceased into the grave, the punishment can start. You and me think he's lying down. He's probably shrieking, but our ears are blocked, na? It's only people like Muhaddith al-Qumi who can hear the ghaib, not you and me. This person who's there and lying in the room or in the Imam Barga, we don't know what is going on with him. At times the barzakh starts, the azab starts much before. But in this world when a person goes, tradition says it's a world by itself in this barzakh. They have their own gatherings like you and me sit over here. They have their own majalis as you and me sit over here. They meet each other. They talk to each other. Traditions even say that when a new person has died and he's brought... Now this we are talking about the good people, the pious people, the righteous people. They are in a specific region. The sinners, the impious, the disobedient servants of God are placed in another region. But the fact is that in this group where the pious people are there, they have their own gatherings, they have their own meetings, they have their own talks, they are enjoying their lives, they are given their pleasures, they are given their ecstasy, they are given the bounties of God. Why? Because they have led a good life in the world. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُضِيعُ أَجْرَ الْمُحْسَنِينَ Allah does not let go to waste the work of those who do good. You've done good, you will see the benefits. In barzakh, enjoy. That akhirat enjoyment is a different issue altogether. Till you come there, enjoy here. Tradition says, when these good people come to know that another of their good friends has passed and they are brought to the door of the barzakh, all of them flock to the door. Salamu alaikum. How are you? We are so glad to see you. You've spent your life nicely. Please join us. We are in good comfort. How is the family? How are our family? Talks take place between them. It's an entire world by itself. It is not that something is finished after a person dies and that soul is just moving around anywhere. In the world of God, nothing is ad hoc. I will come to this in a minute. But at the same time, on the other side of the coin also takes place. Those who have not led their life, and we will come to that shortly. Over here, I want to mention one point. And I want to mention this point because a similar question was asked to me. Asked to me by somebody, had it not been that person, I might not have taken the trouble of taking another 2-3 minutes of my time today, tonight. The lady that asked me was a teacher in a madrasa. She's asking, and the concept was that, what happens to this, to these individuals? Okay, a person who dies normally, he's sick, he dies. His souls are taken and put into barzakh. But those people who are murdered, those people who are killed in accident, those people who commit suicide, that is not their life that has ended. They have ended it by themselves. So their souls may be just flying around here and there. It doesn't work this way. Huh? In the ruling of God, in the domain of God, nothing is ad hoc. In the world and realm of God, there is nothing that is left to chance. Everything has a ruling. Nothing can happen without the permission of God. This concept that a person commits suicide, a concept that a person is murdered, the concept that a person is dying in an accident, that souls do not go to barzakh, doesn't work. as soon as death comes and the soul comes out, it goes to Barzakh, which has its own rulings. Even here, when this person has taken his life, it is with the permission of God. It had been written for him that death was ordained for him. Had he not committed suicide, somebody else, some other way he would have died. But nobody can oppose the rulings of God that you say, this person had a life of 35 years, but he chose to end his life at 30 years, opposing the will of God. We don't have these things in Islam. It may be there in some other religion, but in Islam, everything is controlled by that all-powerful Ala Kulli Shay'in Qadir. Nothing is left to chance. So the moment this person commits suicide, it is with the permission of God. It is, has been according to the knowledge of God that this man will commit suicide. It cannot happen that God decrees 35, he decrees 34, he dies at 34. This is not our belief of our God. This is not our belief of our Islam. At that time when that person commits suicide, there is only one entity who can take that soul, that is Malakul Maut. Malakul Maut, under the instructions and strict instructions of God, that soul is taken and put into Barzakh. It is not something that anybody does whatever he or she wants. We are talking not about a human created organization. We are talking about an organization created by the Almighty, created by the All Wise, one who has control over all things, one who has knowledge about all things. So when this goes, there are strict rulings. Who can meet who? How can person talk to somebody? All rulings are there fixed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This concept of bhoot that is there. You know bhoot? A bhoot, bhoot che aya rumma. We don't have it in Islam. Bhoot, according to certain philosophy, means that a soul that has died before his death and is now clinging to trees and hanging on walls. That is not our Islam. That is not our God. Our God is one who is in complete control of even a small ant for its food. That is our God. And not that ant's food for now, but that ant's food for the entire life that that ant is alive. That is our God. So much meticulous planning is there. When you say Allamul Ghuyub, that is what it means. When you say Alim, that is what it means. Everything is planned to perfection. Nothing is left to chance, clinging to walls and hanging on trees. It all goes back to another realm, which is bounded by certain rules. Rules that dictate how these people talk. And in that there are rules. You find that in Barzakh, if people are good, they are allowed to come from that realm into this world. And that's why we've got traditions. Our marhumin, the people who have died, are given permission to visit the relatives on the night of Friday, Shabbat Jumu'ah. Tradition says, they come. They see, what is my son doing after having taught him so much? Does he have the time to recite one surah Fatiha for me or not? But it is not everybody who comes on Friday Shabbat Jumu'ah. It's not for everybody. A tradition from the sixth Imam says there are people who come once a week. Because they've been given permission, now they can't just come as it is. It's a world by itself. You cannot cross it without permission. You cannot come out of it as and how you want. You cannot meet whoever you want. It has its own rulings. Tradition says certain people will be given permission to see their relatives once a week. Certain people once a month. These are again traditions. Once a month. Certain people once a year. Certain people are allowed only once in a lifetime. As the rank of this person high, as his deeds in this dunya better, the more facility is given. You are a good man, reciting Salatul Layl, obeying your parents, respecting your parents, come every week. You, only Ashura in the mosque. Hiya, once in a year, go and see what your children are doing. It's all bound by rulings. You just cannot do. But, for those individuals, remember I had told you, there are two sides of a coin for all our discussion. One that will fear us, that will frighten us, that will terrify us. But the other side of the coin gives us hope. That hope should not be lost. If that hope is lost, then everything is lost. That hope is there. And it is bound to be there as long as we've got Hussain. It's bound to be there. As long as Ali is there, that is bound to be there. As long as we have Fatima with us, that is bound to be there. But because of that, we should not become ghafil of the other side. On those who have done good, there have been instances that in Barzakh, people hear what we talk. That is when one of the expeditions of the Holy Prophet, after coming, when he's coming to Medina, outside Medina there's a graveyard. They're about to enter Medina when he takes a detour, he's won that expedition, he's won the battle. Right? God has promised the Prophet, I'm there to help you. إِذَا جَاءَ نَصْرُ اللَّهِ وَالْفَتْحَ I'm there to help you. He wins that expedition, he's about to come to Medina, he takes a detour, he goes to that graveyard. Says, يَا أَهَلَ الْقُبُورِ إِنِّي وَجَدْتُ مَا وَعَدَنِي رَبِّي حَقَّى I have observed what my God had promised me as true. فَحَلْ وَجَدْتُمْ مَا وَعَدَكُمْ رَبُّكُمْ حَقَّى Did you find out what your God has promised you as truth in the grave? Are you seeing things that I was telling you before? Be careful, otherwise you are facing this. Did you find it? The companions around say, Ya Rasulullah, these people have died. You're talking to them, can they hear us? Hal yasma'un? Are they hearing? The Prophet says, Whom asma'u minni, asma'li minkum. They hear you, they hear me better than what you hear me. The only thing is that they're not able to reply to me because of that barzakh and that rule of God that inhibit and prohibit them from talking to me. They are hearing better than what you are hearing. And their comprehension is better than what you are comprehending. Because they are experiencing the thing that I was telling them. So they hear. But at times there are occasions when Allah gives them permission to talk. The person dead can talk to the person in this world. Two different realms. But they talk. Hazrat Isa alayhi salam. With his Hawariyun, just going by. See, every prophet has a specific manner of doing tabligh. What Hazrat Isa would do would be, he would take his Hawariyun, go from city to city, do tabligh, go from city to city, do tabligh, and guide the people. During one of his movements, he was going to the grave, a graveyard. No, he was going to a place where all of a sudden he sees something like a graveyard. From far, it looks like an habitation, but there's no movement. So as they go near, they find that it was a habitation before. Had the signs of buildings, had the signs of life. But the moment they enter that city or that town, ajab, all along the ground bodies are strewn. Not the bodies of humans only. Humans, animals, insects, birds, plants, dead, no sign of life. As soon as Hazrat Isa sees this, he turns to his Hawariyun and says, this is a place where the adab of God has come. So they say, how do you understand, how do you realize this? He's saying, had this not been the case, and had they died a natural death, they would have buried one another. Nobody's buried anyone. Everybody, the bodies are strewn. Animals lying dead. Birds lying there, plants withered, no sign of life. So the Hawariyun say, Ya Ruhallah, do us a favor. Pray to Allah that He raises them up so that we can question them. What was the sin because of which this adab of God has descended upon you, leaving you in this state so that we may gain ibrah and lesson so that we do not fall into the same trap. We do not commit the same sin. Hazrat Isa says, okay. He climbs a small hillock, a mount, and he prays to Allah. Allah care, I seek your permission to grant one of them to come out of Barzakh. See? Without permission of God, he don't come out. Allah, I seek your permission to grant one of them to come out of Barzakh so that these Hawariyin can talk to them. Allah, a revelation comes to Hazrat Isa. Ya Isa, address these people. Somebody will answer you. So he turns to them and says, oh people over here, I've been asked to talk to you. Who is it that will answer? From one far corner somebody gets up. Assalamu alaikum ya Ruhallah. Hazrat Isa salam upon you. Everybody is looking. Now that person has got up from dead, huh? Now the Prophet is talking to him. Hazrat Isa. He's saying, who are you? Saying, I'm a member of this community. He's saying, how did you die? He's saying, the adab of God came and took us up. He's saying, how? He's saying, we don't know. Night we were sleeping very comfortably after a good dinner and baraza. And these are my words, huh? That person did not say baraza. Sallu ala Muhammad. The night we were sleeping very comfortably with all our food taken, little realizing what is going to happen. In the middle of the night, the adab of Allah comes. We don't know, we don't stand a chance, we don't realize what happens. We finished. The Prophet Isa asks him, what was your sin? What was your sin? He's saying, one major sin. He's saying, one sin that took us was that we were too engrossed into the life of this world that we forgot the Akhirah. So Prophet Isa is asking, what level of love did you have for this dunya? What level of attraction did you have for this dunya that made you forget the Akhirah? He said, the level of attraction as a mother has for a newborn child. So Hazrat Isa is asking you, if this is the case, I had addressed everybody. Why is it that only you stood up? Why not the others? So he said, because I was one of them who was the better amongst them. And I was given this opportunity to come. Ya Ruhallah, inform your people, if they want to be successful in the hereafter, let them not become ghafil and ignorant and heedless of the hereafter. See? Permission sought, person comes from dead to talk to this person. But this is not the only thing. This is not the only thing. There have been instances, and just one last instance, and then we go to the Messiah. And as it is slowly moving to that request. At times there have been cases when individuals, see, these things should not be just taken in as stories, huh? The intention to sit over here is not to pass time with stories. These instances serve as a lesson for us that if there is problems, there are also levels of rank that can raise a person very high. Listen to this. This incident, when we say that realm is a different realm, this realm is a different realm, there are times when that curtain is raised by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because of the level of the person that is concerned, Allah says, I'm going to change my rule for this person because of his rank. Listen to this incident. It is amazing. This, and I'm going to narrate who has narrated this. The person who's narrating is Mullah Muhammad Naraqi, the author of the book Jami'u Sa'ada, 3 volumes of Akhlaq. You will not go to any house except that you will find this book being taught by the scholars of Akhlaq. Amazing. And a very, very refined, spiritually refined personality. Agai Naraqi Buzurg. His son, an equivalent, an equally fadil and a virtuous alim. Ahmed Naraqi, who writes a book, Mi'raj al-Sa'ada, which is a summary of the book of his father. Agai Naraqi Buzurg narrates that one of my friends, very trustworthy friends, he is narrating. Now this is a talk about Iran. He's saying that on the day of Nowruz, Nowruz is regarded as one of the biggest Eids in Iran. And they have got this practice, as we all have in the day of Eid, to visit their relatives and friends. So this person is telling Mullah Naraqi Buzurg, and he's quoting this, that this person says, it was the time of Eid, and it was a Tuesday. So we decided to move from the village and go to Isfahan to meet our relatives. In Isfahan, when he goes there, this person who's narrating, he's narrating when I was a small child, I was a teenager, together with his father and a few of his relatives and friends, they say, let's go to Isfahan and today is the day of Eid, let's meet them. It would be a good idea to have a get together. So they get up from their village and go towards Isfahan. When they reach Isfahan, they meet their friends, one friend that they want to meet, they go to his house, they're informed he is not there. When will he come? We don't know. It might take some time. Now they're thinking, we have come from such a long way to meet our friends. We don't know when we will get another chance. We might as well wait for a few hours and wait for him to come. Let's meet him and then go back to the village. What do we do now? He said, let's go to Takht-e-Fulad. What's Takht-e-Fulad? Takht-e-Fulad is a cemetery, is a graveyard on the outskirts of Isfahan. It has a very special significance, because all the scholars who want to, who wish to, who have spiritually refined themselves, have at some point of time undergone certain acts of ibadat in the Takht-e-Fulad because of its spiritual nature of that graveyard. Very famous. There are certain quarters where all these big scholars, Ayatollah Nukhodichi, Agha Behajat, they would go there and spend some time. These people say, let's go to the graveyard. We'll sit around under the shade of the trees. We'll pass some time, have some food, and in the evening or some at some point of time later, we'll go and see whether this friend of ours has come. So all of them go. They enter the graveyard, they decide this place is good, they sit beside it, amongst between the graves. While they're taking, they take out their food and start consuming them. As they're eating, one of them is a playful type. So he turns to one of the graves and says, hello my friend, today is the day of Eid. Don't you want to entertain us and give us some Eid, some refreshments? Jokefully, they just want to pass time, right? So he just turns and says, hello my friend, you are inside, today is the day of Eid, you've come from so far, would you not want to entertain us? And laughing, he turns aside. All of a sudden, from that very grave, a voice comes out. Next week, you are my guest. This is an incident narrated by Mullah Naraqi Buzur. Voice comes out, next week, you are my guest, all of you. Well, if you are told from a voice comes from the grave, that you are my guest next week, the first reaction would be in a khalas. We just have 1 week's time. Shocked. You don't expect a reply from a grave. And a reply from a grave stating, next week you're coming to me. That means they decided khalas, our time is finished. Next Tuesday is the last. Sukaru aya. Lakho, ketla roja baki che. How many namaz remaining? How much karz remaining? All of them become one of the most muttaki person on earth. There's a 1 week left. We're going to go down. Let's start. All of them, they rush back home. Friend, brand, everything forgotten now. When your life is in danger, then what friend? They rush back home. Nights namaz shab, namaz jafar taya, dua kumal, dua tawassu. Every dua in Mafatihul Jinan recited. Every qada namaz, one after the other. Times pass. This is Tuesday. Next Tuesday, they're supposed to go back. Wednesday pass, Thursday pass, friends, we are going friends, wasiyat done, all of them. Friday comes, saying 3 more days, 4 more days, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. When it's Monday, now they start sending out their servants to each other's houses. How are you? You okay? They don't have cell phones, click, click. Send the servants out, how are you? Say, no, I'm quite okay, no signs of any sickness, no heart attack, no cancer. What about you? No, I'm perfectly okay, things look very nice. How are you? I'm okay. I don't know. I'm just waiting now. Tomorrow is Tuesday. Monday passes. Everybody tense. Now everybody in the family knows he's crying. Some people's wives are crying. Children are crying. Father is going to go tomorrow. Husband is going to die tomorrow. Tuesday happens. Nothing. Everybody in the morning discussion. No, we are quite okay. So don't worry. Tuesday, today is the last day. Midday, nothing happens. Beyond midday, nothing happens. Saying there's some garbage over here. Let's go. So they pick up, they go over there. It's evening time. They go to the same grave. All of them stand. They're saying, you had invited us. We are here. Today is Tuesday. You had called us, we are here. Entertain us. Agha Naraqi Buzurg says, as soon as they say it, that grave breaks. And what they see, he narrates. He's saying, as soon as the grave breaks in front of them, suddenly their eyes see a huge garden, lush green, trees all around from the top. And a voice comes, why are you so late? I've been waiting for you for such a long time. You are late, you were supposed to come earlier, come inside. So they enter down, and it's a different world by itself. When they look around, flabbergasted. sights that they have never imagined in their life. Gardens, fruits, trees laden with fruits, wind blowing, the sweetness of which they have never tasted. Rivers flowing, the likes of which they have never seen. Sights and beauty that they were seeing, the like of which they have never seen. They look on amazed, what is happening? At a distance they see a palace, a Ajab palace, made up of all emeralds and rubies and yakut and aqiq and firoz and whatever. Saying, what place is this, Bana? So let's go inside. They start moving inside. When they enter inside, Ajab, they enter into the palace which looks like something from Queen Elizabeth's Buckingham Palace. Huge! Right in front of them, they see a lunch table filled with various and innumerable delicacies that they have never seen in this world. At the far end, on a throne, they find a person sitting. Beautiful, radiant, luminous, good clothes, as if he is king. Say, who are you? Are you a prophet? Are you a wasi? Are you one of the muqarribin of Allah? Who are you? He's saying, about that later, come down. We are waiting for you. Come and sit down. As they sit, small little servants come, beautiful young little boys, giving them food, giving them fruits, giving them delicacies. Say, as we would eat, the delicacies, something that we have never tasted in our lives. But the more we would eat, as Ajab was that in dunya, whatever we eat, after some time, then you feel satiated. You can't eat more. Here, whatever we are eating, we still have enough space. Good place for the khwajas, Bana. Keep eating, no worry. Right? We love to eat. You don't get satiated. They are eating and eating. After some time, they say, what is this place? So that man says, this is my barzakh. He's saying, this is your barzakh. But who are you? Who are you? He's saying, you don't recognize me. Look carefully. Saying, we've never seen such a handsome face before. Who are you? I don't recognize you. Saying, yes, you know me. You know me, that butcher in the street living next to your lane. That is me. You are that butcher. That butcher who's cut meat. Saying, yes. You've been given this by God. Saying, yes. For what? What did you do? We never saw you doing something extravagant that you deserve this. What was it that you did? He's saying, two things. Two things because of which my youth pay attention. Two things because of which God has given me this grace. Not only I have been given the rank as you see I have, but I have also been given the rank that I can call people from the dunya into the barzakh and then send them back. Two things. See what? Tell us. He's saying, first thing again, my young brothers, first thing, I would always pray my salat on time. I would always pray my salat on time. I would never delay it. Time for salat, I would leave it. So much so that if I'm a customer comes to me and I've cut up like a piece of flesh and I've put it on my scale and I hear the sound of the muazzin calling Allahu Akbar, I would not even weigh that piece of flesh. I would put it and tell him, come afterwards. First it is Allah. I would go to the mosque to pray. One, and second, never in my life have I ever sold less for more money. وَيْلٌ لِلْمُطَفِّفِينَ Mutaffifin means those who take more money and give less. 1 kilo, 975 grams take. This is not just for weighing, this goes for everything. That means a person who doesn't cheat his mu'min brother, a person who doesn't deceive his mu'min brother, who doesn't take his haq, this is what is meant. Saying two things. One, the right of the people I took care of. Second, the right of God. When I took these two things, this is what I am. I am able to call you down and treat you to my food. So after they have everything, they say, now we will have to leave. He says, you'll have to go now. This is the permission that I have. He takes them to that place near the grave. All of a sudden, blink of an eye. In the blink of an eye, suddenly everything goes normal. They're standing outside the grave, in the dilapidated graveyard, with the dilapidated grave. This is what happens This is what happens when people and individuals become the disobedient servants of God, become the obedient servants of God. And this is what, and these are the kinds of people personified by those 72 people in Karbala. Don't take them to be just 72 individuals. Those 72 individuals personify Islam, headed by that Salar-e-Shahidan, Hussain ibn Ali, alayhi salatu wasalam. But this entire program that started in Karbala, no, it did not start in Karbala. The entire sacrifice and the qurbani and the shahadat that took place did not start in Karbala. It started somewhere else. By somebody, at the hands of somebody, whom Hussain himself says, Inni ba'atun ilaykum akhi wabna ammi Muslim ibn Aqil. I am sending to you somebody. I am sending to you my brother, my wasi, Muslim ibn Aqil. Before Karbala took place, the shahadat had started with the shahadat of Muslim. Today is the 3rd of Muharram. When Hussein had come from Medina to Mecca, the people in Kufa had started writing letters. According to some narrations, 12,000. According to some narrations, 18,000. According to some narrations, 30,000. Whatever it is. What is important is innumerable letters. As the days would pass, the letters would increase. Hussein, come over here. We need you. We don't want Yazid, a corrupt person, a sinful person, a fasik person. We cannot be under his rule. Come over, take the leadership of Kufa. We drive away the ruler, the governor of Yazid. You set up and establish an Islamic empire, just like your father did. We are there to support you. Come Hussein, Hussein, come. The letters would increase. As the number of letters increased, the tone and the severity also increased. First they would say, please come, we are waiting for you. We require you, we request you. Then the tone would change. Ya Hussein, you are required to come here. You must come here. You must take over the affairs. Till eventually it became very harsh. Saying, Hussein, we are calling you. You have to come. If you don't come on the day of judgment, we will complain to your grandfather that we called but you did not come. This is the problem, huh? When somebody wants to teach an imam what to do. And this is what happens to us when we want to teach our maharaja what to do. Little bit of knowledge and we want to ask him, where is it written in the Quran that keeping a beard is wajib? What do you know about the Quran that you want to know where it's written in the Quran? But this is what has been going on from right along, such a long time. Hussein sees that now he has to respond. So he sends Muslim ibn Aqil. Saying, Muslim, go. See the situation. If things are okay, call me, we will come and then we will see what to do. Muslim sets out. And the words that Imam Hussein writes, Inni ba'ithun ilaykum akhi, I'm sending to you my brother, wabna ammi, and the son of my uncle, Muslim ibn Aqil, the emissary, the ambassador of Hussein. You see, when you say ambassador of Hussein, it means a lot, huh? When you say Muslim ibn Aqil was the emissary of Hussein, he was the ambassador of Hussein. You know what's an ambassador? An ambassador represents the entire ideology of that country, entire ideology of that government, entire beliefs of that Bala government. All the stance and the stand of that government is represented by this ambassador in this country. When Hussein is sending Muslim, he's got so much yaqeen on Muslim. He's got so much confidence in Muslim that for whatever thing Muslim Hussein stands, Muslim stands for those things. And whatever things Hussein values, Muslim values. And hence Muslim goes. But a deep situation in Kufa. When he goes, certain traditions narrate, 40,000 people did bayat at the hands of Muslim. Muslim, you are doing bayat at your hands, which effectively, in our eyes, is the hands of Hussein ibn Ali. If you come, and as you have come, and if Hussein come, we will support you. That's what bayat means. Bayat means to pledge allegiance, that if you come, we will support you. But that took place And then eventually came that Maghrib prayers that all of us know about. That when Hussein enters the mosque to pray Maghrib prayers. At that time Ibn Ziyad, when he comes to know that Muslim has come and people have pledged allegiance to Muslim and therefore to Hussein, he uses the same things that we have always seen right through history. One hand the money, the other hand the sword, temptations and fear. You come to me, take money. No money, then the sword. Ibn Ziyad made an announcement. If anybody follows Muslim, understand how the effect takes place. When Muslim enters the mosque to pray, the whole mosque is filled Maghrib prayers. Ibn Ziyad comes to know. He announces, anybody is caught praying behind Muslim, his life mubah, his wife mubah, his children mubah, his property mubah. Mubah means free to do anything by me. So if somebody is caught, his life is in danger. Dignity of his wife in danger. The life of the children in danger. The property in danger. I will take all of them. That is why when you say that he turns behind after Maghrib prayers, there's nobody. Everybody leaves. On one hand, either he tempts them by money, on the other hand, he threatens them by the sword. This is the type of the people Hussein was hesitant to take their help. Otherwise, you remember Imam Ali, what did he say? He says, if I had 40 people, I would have stood up against those people. Hussein, 12,000 people calling you, why aren't you standing up? He knows the category of the people. But now Hussein, Muslim ibn Aqil, when he turns back in Kufa that night, an amazing night, an ajeeb night, he turns around and sees nobody. Alone, called by 30,000 people, now alone in Kufa. He comes out of the mosque, keeps moving into the streets. Late night, nobody is willing to give him shelter. Who wants to take the risk of keeping Muslim in the house and risk being reported to Ibn Ziyad? Nobody entertains him. Throughout the night, he's moving around. Deep into the night, he gets tired. He sits down. Fortunately, he sits down at a place at the doorstep of a house in which a lady had love for the Ahlul Bayt. This lady realizes somebody sitting at late in the night, opens the door. What does she see? She sees a young man sitting at the door. It's a young man, at this time of the night you're sitting over here. You need to go to your house. This time is not good. Ibn Ziyad's people are moving all around. You're not supposed to be here. Go to your house. You should be in your house. Muslim turns and says, and what should a person do who has no house? He said, what do you mean you don't have any house? What do you mean you don't have any house? He's saying, I'm a stranger, I'm visitor, and I'm all alone. As soon as she heard that I'm a stranger and a visitor and all alone, she turns to him and says, Anta Muslim ibn Aqil? Are you Muslim ibn Aqil? Muslim puts his head down and says, I'm Muslim ibn Aqil. I am Muslim ibn Aqil. That lady by the name of Tawa falls around and says, oh Aqa, you are sitting over here, come inside. She takes him inside, feeds him. Oh Aqa, you are the emissary of my Hussein. If nobody in Kufa will take care of you, I, Tawa, will take care of you. If nobody will support you, I will pick up a sword and fight for you. Come inside. She takes him inside, she feeds him. The whole night Muslim passes in prayers. He was of the Hussein, right? Hussein passed Shabe Juma, Shabe Ashur in prayers. Muslim passed his last night in prayers. The next day morning Ibn Ziyad comes to know. Muslim is in this house. All early in the morning they hear the horses' hoofs surrounding the place. Muslim realizes he's surrounded, he cannot stay inside. He unsheathes his sword, he's about to go out. At that time Tawa says, Muslim, don't go out. You go out, you are exposing yourself. Stay inside and fight. He's saying, no Tawa, I have to go outside and fight. But she says, you're putting yourself into more danger outside. He's saying, yes, I know it, but I cannot stay in the house. She says, why? He says, if I stay in the house, these people will come inside. And if they come inside, then there is a risk of your behijabi. I don't want your behijabi to occur. I would tell Muslim, you're so worried about the behijabi of this old tawah. Are come on the night of the 11th of Muharram, Sham-e-Ghareeba, and you will see what behijabi of Zainab and Umm Kulsoom is. Ummah Muslim goes out and begins to fight. But that lion of Bani Hashim, how much would he fight against the entire force? He kills many, he injures many, but eventually he is captured. Captured and is taken to the top of the castle, where he is about to be killed. When he is asked, do you have any last wishes? He's saying, yes, give me some respite. Give me some time. As soon as he says this, he turns towards the way of Kufa, where he knew Hussein was coming. Because people had pledged allegiance. He had told Hussein, people have pledged allegiance. Oh, Aka, come. Hussein takes off from Makkah. He's on the way to Kufa. Muslim realizes it is because of his letter that Hussein is coming. He wants to stop Hussein, but how? So he turns to Kufa and does the next best thing, saying, As-salamu alayka ya Abdullah, As-salamu alayka ya Ibn Rasulullah. And there the sword of the assassin moves. Muslim's head is dropped down, the body is dropped down. At this point of time, Hussein's caravan was coming from Makkah to Kufa. And they were sitting, Hussein had pitched tents. Hussein was sitting in his tent. All of a sudden, Hussein is in his tent. There is nobody with him. Hussein sitting alone. All of a sudden, Hussein stands up, turns to a Kufa and says, Wa alaykum salam, O my brother Muslim! I have received your salams! But Hussein does not inform anybody. Muslim is there. They are about to leave when Abbas sees certain people coming from Kufa. He rushes to Imam Hussein and says, Aqa, there are certain people coming from Kufa. Can I go and ask them about the state of my brother Muslim? Hussein knows, he doesn't repeat. He says, go ask them. Those two people come, Abbas goes to them. You're coming from Kufa? They say, yes, you're coming from Kufa. Did you see Muslim? He says, yes, we saw Muslim. He says, how is Muslim? He says, it was for 3 days that I'm narrating to you. 3 days ago, when Muslim had come, and now that we are coming out, the body of Muslim was being dragged around the streets of Kufa, and the severed neck of Muslim was being hung from the door of Kufa. Abbas comes, tears in his eyes. Aqa Hussein, this is what has been heard. This is what has been narrated. Our Muslim is no longer there. Hussein tells Abbas, go get the daughter of Muslim. Bring the orphan of Muslim to me. The daughter of Muslim was brought. Hussein makes her sit on his lap. He starts caressing her. He starts caressing her hair. He starts kissing her on the lips. She was from Bani Hashim. She knows how things were. She turns to her uncle and says, uncle, you are behaving with me as a person behaves with an orphan. He says, something happened to my father, Muslim Ibn Aqil. Muslim Ibn Aqil, my father, where is he? How is he? Hussein says, don't worry, even if your father is not there, I am there. Hussein is there. Abbas is there to take care of you. Don't worry. And I am going to tell Hussein, Hussein, this Muslim's daughter, you could say, don't worry, your father is there, but your uncle Abbas and uncle Hussein is there. But my heart goes out to that little daughter of yours, Sakina. And you were killed, and Abbas was not there. Who would have gone to Sakina and said, Sakina, don't cry. Your uncle is gone. Your father, though, may be dead. وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ لَعْنَةُ اللَّهِ عَلَى الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ